Ladies and gentlemen, hang on to your hat, episode 28 with Nick Kirk, personal trainer.
Bad Daddy, you're a naughty boy.
These days, fatherhood is everywhere. You can't get away from it. Not that blokes haven't tried. If you're not a father, you've got a father. You're a son of a dad or a daughter of a bloke. But either way, being a dad is no picnic. The fear, the anger, the confusion and, well, the love, of course. Oh. Derek Myers and Dan Lee, together with their special guests, are here to share the highs and lows, the joys and the agony of being a modern dad. But most of all, to let you know that you're not alone.
I want to get a club mix of that song. Can we get someone out there to make a kind of rave 12-inch dance remix of that, our theme
Absolutely.
Song?
Chemical Brothers are coming up. Maybe we can hook them up.
Yeah, that'll be sweet. G'day, Nick. This is Nick Kirk here. He's the owner-operator with your wife,
yep.
I assume, of Team Elwood, and that's where I go for my exercise on a regular basis. I'm being personally trained, not by Nick though, but by one of the other guys there. And I just wanted to – how are you going, by the way?
I'm good.
You good? Yeah.
It's great to be here. I feel –
In the panic room.
Yeah, amongst royalty with the long list of star-studded guests that you've had over the last 27 episodes.
Yeah, yeah. And he was noticing the size of the locks on the doors. He was feeling a bit – when you get in, ushered into a warehouse in Collingwood – it's a bit like Reservoir Dogs, isn't it?
Yeah.
So anyway, but do you remember when Missy and I came down to the gym to sign up, and I said, and we had the chat that you had at the start.
Yep.
Because my main thing was I'm 10 years older than Missy, and I want my body to, you know, I'm worried about falling apart long before her. So I just was like, I just want my core. I just want to have some strength. I just want to not, you know, disintegrate before the eyes of my family. But I remember saying to you, but the most frightening word in the English language was team.
Yeah, yep.
Because specifically because it doesn't have an I in it.
Mm.
But the irony is, because I was not much of a sport player, but having an actual personal trainer, someone to actually get to know and kick your ass around the gym, is unbelievably helpful.
Yeah.
Especially when you get unleashed on a gym, you know, in normal gyms without any idea of what to do.
Yeah, I think the thing that sets us apart with our business and why we went in that direction is that I guess the big difference with what we do is that basically 100% of our revenue, I guess, and what we do, 100% of what we do is one-on-one personal training. And a lot of other fitness businesses, you know, they're trying to create revenue by just letting people come in and use the space or doing big groups, so to reduce the cost kind of thing. And
kind of counting on a lot of people not going too.
Yeah, absolutely, you know?
What's the percentage of gym memberships that don't get used?
If you've got one of the big gyms that, you know, might have 2,000 or 3,000 members, if all of those members turned up, it'd be impossible. It'd just be totally untenable. So, the big difference is, you know, if you're coming in, like the most fundamental part of personal training, and I guess the value has to extend beyond it, is the obligation to turn up and meet someone, you know? If you wake up in the morning, you're like, oh, you know, I'm feeling 70% today, so I'm not going to train. That sort of gets eliminated.
Yeah.
And
there's that person, that connection with people. I was quite surprised. I just wasn't sure about that. But having a bit of a community.
It's brave. I think it's very brave to do. I remember when I used to do the wrought iron, and you stuck with that whole idea of doing that, you know. Years later, you go, oh, if I'd have just gone, employed some people, made pool fences, I'd be driving around in a fucking Range Rover. Everything'd be sweet now when we're living in Preston in a bunker, right?
Yeah,
But, you know, it's brave. But if you do it right and that's the product, then it's fabulous. I got to say, we've had a lot of we a growing diversity of guests in our show. We've had guys that hunt crocodiles, chase down wild bulls,
Just scaling it down a little bit this week.
Young skaters from the country. No.
Taz Jackson.
No, we're not scaling it down. Most likely, the most alien to me would be a personal trainer. I admit it. But I
can
do.
You do anything for Derek?
I'm not trying to get free. All the psych guys I try and secretly get free shit out of, but it's going to be pretty obvious if I go, what do I do now?
Yeah. This is not an intervention, by the way. But...
I'll tell you one quick story, and you can tell me how you feel about this before we get on to fatherhood issues. Mm. I did go to a personal trainer once, so I've got 40 minutes experience. My friend and I, we just had enough, and I felt frumpy and out of shape, and I was probably about 95 kilos. So that's about 25 ago,
mm-hmm.
or 30 right. or so. And we went to a personal trainer, and we got there, and just not wanting to be anyone being sort of rude to us, but to tell us what to do, you know, to change our keystone habits or whatever we needed to be done and get us used to something, or at least get us a feeling of positivity.
Mm.
Anyway, we got there and then we did, he goes, do that and do that. And then he goes, what do you want to do now? This is like me and my friend. Like, I told this story last week on my big boy show.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like, what do you want to do now? And it was like,
that's the wrong person.
Go home, have
question.
A lie down, order a pizza. What do you fucking think I want to do now?
Got a pizza menu?
Mm. Yeah, exactly. So that was the end for me. I didn't see one. But it didn't make me go, that's a daft idea. They don't work. I assume that this was a guy who had a business weakness.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's changed a lot, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, we got in the industry 15 years or so ago, I suppose, and where we really started to commit to it. And, you know, the landscape has changed so much in that time as well, in terms of what, well, for the most part, for the good trainers, and I'm sure there's still trainers out there that probably do that, but, you know, from what the needs of people were 15 years ago, and even the education, like a lot of people know what to do now for exercises, and a lot more people know the impact of different types of eating now. So it's a lot less about education and a lot more about accountability and guidance and just steering in the right direction, rather than saying, you know, like totally trying to flip your lifestyle on its head to re-engineer your habits kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's the thing is as well that, you know, there's that many course providers that are out there now, and so many people getting personal training qualifications.
Yeah.
We actually just went and spoke myself and one of the other trainers at one of the course providers to try to sort of hone out you know, some trainers that could come and work for us to expand our team a little bit. And it's amazing the amount of people that are in those courses now that are 30 plus or mid 30s that are just like, I'm fucking sick of what I do now, and I can't do this anymore. I'm in corporate or I'm working in banks or whatever, and I just want to get back to, you know, on a personal level and helping people and making a difference and all that sort of thing. So they just quit their jobs and take off the golden handcuffs and dive into a totally new career where you're potentially sacrificing half of your wage or more, especially for the first part. So yeah, I think the amount of PTs out there now is huge, and it's still evolving. But
it's good for me too, because it's not like the muscle man thing, you know. It's not like this just weight, you know, trying to lift as much weight as you can, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
it's an overall kind of well-being and just trying to feel good, you know, generally, and have someone you can talk to and ongoing. And you also, I found when you first start, you just having someone else there watching, you can't help but try to impress them a little bit.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
That counts for something
too.
It's
got to tap into that psyche.
Yeah, I'm not going to. Yeah. Well, you know what I mean? It's like that the last couple of reps are the ones that do the work. And if you're on your own, it's easy to just go, no one's looking. I'm just going to watch the telly.
You finish your set and you're like, did I do okay, coach?
There's no TVs in the fucking place, you know, and it's like this relationship. So I was totally surprised with that, because I was quite skeptical about that early on. And then you know, you find the right kind of nerd for you. Like Simon's great for me, because he's like, he's all about this sort of form and zen thing, and I have no idea it could be like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not about trying to get. I'm just trying to not break my back when by the.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was
yeah.
about being old and mm. having these kids. This brings us to kids, Derek. Mm.
Oh, excellent,
Derek. No, what is no but like I wanted to. We talk a lot about having been quite old when we had our kids in our 40s, and I want to be able to play with them and lift them, because I remember I had the double hernia operation.
Yep.
All from. What? Do you remember that? So when vaguely. Sammy, what happens, right? And I found this out from the woman that did the ultrasound for my hernias. She goes, got a toddler, have you? I said, yeah. She goes, oh, yeah, we get a lot of, well, she was hinting older dads who have blown their hernias out because they're a bit older and they're lifting kids.
And all of a sudden they've got this load coming from the side of their body from nowhere.
Totally. And because the kid grows gradually and you keep picking it up like you did when the kid was like 18 months or one or whatever, and then they get heavier and boom. And so I had double hernia surgery, groin hernias.
God.
They're making a fortune, those hernia surgeons, from old dads.
question for Nick then, is if someone went, all right, let's say it was me, right, and it was 11 years ago, I was like 112 kegs, unfit, pretty much sedentary. It just sounds like geology, doesn't it?
Sedimentary.
Spent a lot of years under 8 layers of dirt, prehistoric bones, and I came to you and said, right, my wife's knocked up. My back's all fucked.
Help!
What am I going to do? Like, would you actually work towards that? Like, you were saying before about that surprise lifting from the side and that, would you sort of work something in?
Absolutely,
getting ready for that particular
I think
task?
Back when I started my career, I was always a lot about, people would come to you just wanting to lose weight or change their body composition in some way. And it's still, a lot like that. But, everything was around doing, like, trying to manipulate numbers and progress through numbers where you're trying to lift a little bit more or run a little bit further or do something a little bit quicker or lose a few centimetres or kilos or whatever it was. But now I think since having kids, one of my, my barometer of my physical health at any given time, because even for me it goes up and down, is how am I getting off the floor? When I'm down with my one-year-old and playing off the floor, how much groaning and how much am I holding my breath and how slow am I and that sort of thing. And that's something that I think about with dads and mums that come through is that if you just get people trying to lift more on a bench press or a squat or a deadlift or those really big masculine movements, it's not going to help when, you're getting a kid out of the car from all the way over here, from the midline of your body.
All the ergonomic rules are out the window.
That's right.
You have to pick the kid.
And you agility. Hear it so often that people come up with these injuries and they say, oh, look, it's not from training. It was just I was putting my sock on or I was picking up a toy or picking up one of the kids or something like that. But that can sort of be traced back to the kind of conditioning that you put yourself through because if you're training along the train tracks, along this straight line, doing this press and pull and push and all that sort of thing, and you're not, doing things like the cable exercises where, you're moving across your body and all that sort of thing. So that's...
they're not real-world actions, are they?
Yeah, that's right.
Not actions that translate to what you're doing.
Absolutely.
That fucking car thing's... A real big one. Did you bugger your back reaching them out through the car?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
no doubt.
Putting
about
them
it.
Into the seat.
It was agony.
You do that.
You know, I did plenty of years as a blacksmith.
Mm.
I unloaded, 4 or 5 tons of steel for over an hour's period to bring into the here and stuff like that. No problem. You're always aware of your ergonomics.
Mm.
Because you need to be okay next week.
You're just repeating,
But then these kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're under pressure.
And now
they're dynamic, they're moving all the time.
Yeah, bastards are really.
And they're 9/11. They just run at you.
Yeah.
So you've got impact from any random angle.
That's right.
Going to hit you at any moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I find it very hard to say to them. It's a tricky conversation with my kids when I say, look, again, dad has got a spine disease, right? I really want to wrestle and I will wrestle, but right now I've got a headache and my because of my spine, like I've got some spine shit, right?
Right.
And I've got a headache, and it will get better, and we will wrestle again.
We will
right
wrestle
now,
again.
I can't wrestle. I've had a big day, and it hurts. Mm. And I'm always conscious of that. And they just go, oh, and they moan, and you go, oh, come on, give me a break. You're being a bit cruel here. Put me under pressure.
Mm.
Yeah, but, I guess it's about this, you know, specialised training.
Yeah.
And that's where, for me, I couldn't go to a gym. I can't go and sit in the go to Northlands and sit down and pay $20 to get a Chinese person to massage me on the neck for the very same reason. It's going to go wrong and I'm going to end up in a big trouble.
So that must affect what you do in here as well, I suppose, right? Like when you're moving stuff around and, you know, because you'll never do anything linear either day to day, right?
Yeah. Well, career-wise, I went from blacksmithing to scooter mechanic because of my spine and various things, and then dropped back. And now, because this podcasting is fantastic, producing podcasts.
Mm.
But there's another side to that. I'm sitting on my ass, whereas everything was moving. So sedentary.
Yeah. Right? Not sedimentary.
Sedimentary, yeah. So I'm actually more sedimentary now. So you go, oh, fuck, now I have to add.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to actually add a seriously change of habit to my act, because I've always had struggle. I've always struggled doing any kind of exercise for the sake of it.
Mm.
Yes.
You just can't do it.
Yeah.
But I was cycling to work for a while, and then I discovered this Strava thing,
and
I could challenge myself between this road and this road.
Yeah.
It was amazing. This is the man
brain
kicked in. You've been embarrassed about it, but it worked.
Yeah.
And I certainly wasn't competing against other people, right? But it was just like, right, I'm going to get a gold medal. And I just felt like a baby playing a computer.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a little gold medal.
That's what Strava's
like. And it would make me get puffed out. Mm. It was brilliant.
Yeah, and that's the same deal with personal trainers too. They know what you're interested in and what you want to do. And you can make a kind of a game of it and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But it's hard with back stuff, right?
Like
it's a fucking...
Look, back stuff's annoying, and I say to people, get onto it. Because sooner or later, like with the cycling, I discovered my answer. I loved it, dedicated to cycling on commuting. And then I had another health problem, which meant I couldn't cycle for 6 months.
Yeah,
not going on about what it was. But it was awful.
And
it was
you're too old for gonorrhea.
And you go,
come on now.
I'm not too old for syphilis. but it was just annoying, and you kick yourself and you go, my advice to everyone is don't wait around, you know.
But that's why I went and saw these guys, because I was like, I don't want to – I know people have got back problems, and once you've got problems, it's very hard to fix it. And I was like, I just got to fortify that a little bit, especially with these kids that are just racing around. And I was lucky because I still got the hernia thing and, you know. But every time I go to the gym, Nick and I sort of update on how the kids are going and what, you know, if whether they've got the same disease as ours have got.
Yeah.
At the moment. Has it got to you? Has it reached you yet?
Yeah.
How are they going at the moment? Are you coping all right?
Yeah, they're going well.
What age are they?
We've got Brady's our eldest, and he's four, four and a half, and we've got Jesse, who's turning two in November. So. Yeah.
I think you're like a year ahead of us, well-ish.
Sammy's a little bit old. Yeah, Sammy's, I think, six months older than Brady, Jesse's a little bit older than Luna. But, the biggest thing that we're trying to negotiate at the moment is sleep cycles, which I guess, you know, it's just one thing that, you know, you can't really avoid, and if you do, you're pretty lucky about it. But, you know, just the strategies that you try to follow to incentivize and not incentivize too much. And
you mean the older one, trying to get him to sleep?
Well, yeah, that's the big one, yeah. But he'll be up three or four times a night.
Really?
And the challenge is, I guess, because I'm up at 4:30, quarter to five most mornings to go to work.
Oh,
Betsy, the agreement
what
is
are you
kind
a baker?
Of, might as well be.
Do you live in the country or something?
No, well, it's just 5:30 a.m. sessions.
Mm.
Yeah, so
okay.
there is a 5:30 a.m. on a Monday morning. It does exist, and I see it often.
Wow!
But being exhausted and trying to do it, I mean, at least you're not fit, like you're training, so you don't have to do the.
Yeah,
stuff,
and I think the challenge is that, you know, we had a point at the start of this week where because the agreement is kind of that for the mornings that I've got to be up and at the gym, Betsy will attend to Brady if he's up three or four times, because he gets up and he wanders into our room and he's either I'm scared or I want to go in your bed or whatever, and our process is we just march him straight back, but it just doesn't work. It just keeps happening.
Oh, man.
Betsy was at her wit's end at the start of this week, to the point where I was like, look, I've just, you know, got to deal with this, and if I'm up at 4:30, I've still got to get up for this for this kid, you know. And it was funny, as soon as I committed to that, he just went two nights sleeping straight through.
He was like, well, I won that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you very much.
It really does feel like they know more. That's the hardest thing for me with that age, with the four-year-olds, because they know a bit.
Yeah.
But they're still getting off scot-free on
they're
the kind of
they're still juvenile enough to ignore you not have to
they're still like,
learn and take instruction.
I don't understand because I'm a child.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Yeah.
You think they've got some connection with all the other toddlers and they're talking
absolutely.
About it to each other. Because it does, it's wild.
Mm.
You know when you hear yourself saying stuff and you go, oh, I'm saying that. You know,
like your parents.
Like your parents. Yeah. Like when you say, oh, you know, just you tell them their age.
Mm.
You go, you're 11 years old.
Mm.
You're acting like a five-year-old. I don't know whether that's damaging or not.
Yeah.
We need a shrink in here to tell us.
Yeah. I've been doing that. Look, you're four and a half and it's tough. It's a nightmare. You don't have a lot of rights.
Mm.
You don't get to do everything you want to do.
Mm.
And I understand that that's difficult. When you're a grown-up, you can do a lot more. And as you get older, you get to do more things. But it's tough. You know,
How does he respond to that?
Well, I don't know.
That's the angle you're going with anyway.
I think he just likes he just likes that I'm talking to
him. And just not yelling at him.
Not yelling at him. And they just like engagement. He seems to deal well with me sort of talking logically to him. It's like with bedtime. Since I've started saying to him, you know how you're exhausted in the morning and you have a shitty day, you know, if you get to bed a bit earlier, if we do this, he's good. The structure seems to be helping. And then I'll say to him, you're very, very tired, and the sooner you get to sleep, the sooner nighttime will be finished and it'll be tomorrow. But if you just keep jumping around and trying to stay awake, it takes a lot longer, you know. And then, look, oh, you're yawning. See, you're yawning. You must be tired. Mm. You watch. You just imagine this story, because I've developed this story about a beanstalk going up into the clouds and different worlds, right? And so every night there's a different world.
Hang on, you wrote that story?
No, no, I've
heard it before,
Not the beanstalk, but like there might be trampoline world and whatever, and you can go to these different clouds with different worlds. And then what I try to do is when I've done that story, I try to transition him into imagining his own cloud places.
Right.
Because I told him I put a bean inside his pillow and you just rub the pillow and it sprouts out and grows up through the roof and you can go with it. So the idea was to try and transition into like the dream world and then he'll shut his eyes and I try to get him to fantasize about that. And then once he's shut his eyes and if he's still for a few minutes, he'll go to sleep, you know. So far that's working, right?
Mm.
Like this is like
– Dude, that's write that great. Down. You need to write a little book, Dan. What are
that's
you doing?
That's amazing.
Yeah, like of expertise on children.
Fucking most people write books with their own notion.
Yeah.
But it was seriously, I thought, how can I try and bridge him from the real world storytelling that he's dependent on me for to being able to shut his eyes and travel a bit in his head, and then he'll go to sleep.
Mm.
And so far it's working. And I just try to, you know, some people go, he's too young for all this language and logic that you're talking to him. But yes and no.
Mm.
He understands the concept of being too tired tomorrow and that if he goes to sleep sooner, it'll pass quicker. And I don't know. It's hard. But as you say, then suddenly they change the fucking rule book.
And it's just the most dynamic thing that you're ever going to go through in your life. Like every couple of months it's just something different.
Dynamic's non-emotional way of putting it.
Exactly,
horrific, I thought.
But, I mean, I always think, you know, like I just can never get past how whenever you're having challenges, there's always someone else doing it harder.
I know.
Like I can never sort of subscribe to we're doing it tough, even if you've had 3 hours sleep or, you know, you've had multiple nights in a row that it's been difficult.
You know what I do? I start to be skeptical of those parents because I feel like whenever you say this happened, they always one up you and you're like, I don't reckon that fucking happened. Yeah. I reckon they're just trying to win the thing.
Who's more tired?
But it's because it's awful, isn't it? When you think you've had it and you've had a tough night and then someone had something much worse and you're like, fuck.
Yeah, that's right.
But then there's the
other
side of it.
You can't feel sorry for yourself anymore, can you?
No, they deprive you of that.
There's the other side of it when people go, oh, mine just slept through the night from the day he was born.
Yeah.
And you go, okay, are you going to have any more? Yeah, actually, we've got another one coming in July.
This will be our fifth.
Oh, God.
I hope it hurts.
Now, did you, because we, poor old Hugh was here the other week and he goes, oh, we've got a second one coming and apparently is it twice as hard? And we just went, no, it's four or five times as hard. Yeah. His face was like, oh, no.
Well, that's
how
the theory,
did you go
it?
With two, with the second?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess you sort of build it up.
You've forgotten, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I always compare it to like when you're parenting even one or multiple kids, it's like you never really go through a phase for more than 6 months, I guess. So, you know, if you pick up a guitar in 2019 and try to learn to play for 6 months, you'll get so far. But you put it down and you pick it back up again 2 years later, you'll be a bit rusty 6 months later. You know, you're probably not really that good at playing the guitar.
Mm.
And you kind of, you know, like new parents will come to you and say, oh, you know, I bet you remember this and, you know, like ask for your advice or whatever.
Yeah.
But you're like, I've got no idea. I can't remember any of that stuff.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's blocked out trauma.
Incredible.
Yeah. The human mind has blocked it out so that you have some more.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
it's biology
that's
just trying to get you to breed again.
That's right.
Biology's in there at night erasing the stuff.
Get rid of that.
Don't let him know because he's in danger of getting a vasectomy. Make him think that it was all roses.
Yeah.
Fuck, man.
But I don't remember anything particularly. I think you just sort of build it up in the beginning. Like when you're, you know, leading up to that second child, you put the helmet on, you're like, right, I'm ready. And you expect this like huge explosion of overwhelming and whatnot. But, you know, there's just something within you that just copes with it. And I think we've been pretty lucky with our two guys. Like they were pretty easy babies and we didn't have any issues with their health or anything like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, they always say, don't they, the going from one to two isn't as hard as going from two to three. I've heard that from a lot of people, I think.
Really? Well, that makes – or I've heard it the other way too.
Yeah, like – yeah, I don't know. Yeah, because on the other end they say that, you know, once they start to outnumber you, that's when it gets really dangerous.
Well, Derek says it's –
9 to 10's the worst. No, hang on. 10 to 11, no, hang on.
But we joke knows? About how there's a certain point. Those people who have 10 kids, it's because they've just – they're totally broken. Like, they just doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, surely with 10 kids, you like any sense of your own kind of life. Like, you would have to make your kids your life. And some people want that totally, and that is their life.
Yeah, you
or
just
it would have
put
to
your
be,
career away and just,
yeah, just
it's
this,
family.
This
yeah.
is it. And that's fine if you can do that.
Well, Melbourne, first 30-degree day in spring,
it's
fucking too hot, isn't it? It's like you can't breathe in the car. It's too hot. Blah, blah, blah. Whereas 3-4 months later, if it's 42 degrees, that's how it feels. It feels the same. So it's just like the shock and awe of the lifestyle change and the responsibility and the emotions and everything at once when you have a new one.
Yep.
That fades off as at the same I'm doing a graph with my hands, all listeners, but that fades out at the same rate as the increase in trouble, as they get more sentient, as they get more manipulative, the daughters work out how to control daddy's mind.
Yeah, right. See,
we don't have to worry about that.
You guys don't know.
No. Yeah.
They're, don't start talking about the future.
out of the last 27 dads that you've had, what's the most amount of kids?
Oh, that's a good question. Oh. Not many. I think probably three.
Three would be it. Yeah,
right.
People don't go much over three these days.
There's so much to go. When, every day, you know, with this whole diversity of dads vibe, every day my mind goes, oh, that's right. And I was like, I'm looking and I'm thinking I'd like to get some gay dads. And then I go, oh, hang on. If I get, we want gay dads, but adopting gay dads, and then we need sperm donating gay dads.
Yeah.
And then we need, I go, oh, within that, we need the ones that have You know, and then I've gone, oh, shit. And I asked my mate last night, I said, hang on, are we allowed to adopt here? And he told me some amazing stuff. I went, right, now I need some dads that can't adopt because of legal reasons. It goes on and on. So the diversity of the dads is just blowing my
mind. So you need your 10-kid dad.
And you've just made me realize you just made me realize we need some multiple dads. Multiple, like those quadruplets.
Yeah, because we're mainly within our demographic, aren't we?
We start in our demographic and then just
And then branch out.
Into alien things like the personal trainer. There's one thing I always like to know, especially with self-employed, but in when someone's got an established career, is how your career and the knowledge you have within that either advantages or disadvantages your fathering experience, and also the other way. Because a lot of people will go, like I'm sure Hugh from last week will have a lot more to put in about resilience now that he's got a 3-year-old and his resilience is being put to the test. You know, it's more input kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm imagining that you will have a pretty good set of values to give the kids about health and physical education.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, as I said before, you know, I remember having a conversation with one of my clients in Sydney before we moved down to Melbourne, and that would have been in 2009 or something. So I'm mid-20s. I didn't have kids. And I was naively trying to challenge her on her behaviours around having kids. So she would present to me with, I've hardly had any sleep and I'm so tired and I just, you know, I haven't been eating well and I'd missed an exercise session. And I'd challenge her on that and I would say, no, but you can do this and you can change this.
Sergeant Major.
And I'm like bright-eyed and bushy-tailed trying to change lives and just doing whatever I can. But just no fucking idea whatsoever what a mum is going through when she's got a 3- and a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
And she was like, just you wait. And we would always have these conversations, playful conversations about just you wait. And I was like, nah, I've got this established set of values about fitness and that's just embedded in me. It's not going to change. Yeah. But now, I mean, you can definitely go through weeks at a time where you're just dabbling in exercise or, some bad nutrition habits creep in and, you know, your weight goes up a couple of kilos and things just, you know, things happen to you physically that you wouldn't have allowed or you wouldn't have given yourself permission 10 years or before you had kids, I should say. And, you know, I was my thing, I guess, in my late 20s and early 30s was marathon running. I used to enter into 2 or 3 marathons a year and that's basically how I spent my time with exercise. And I think the last one I did was 2016. I've done one since I've had kids. So, you know, I've had to totally re-engineer my attitude and how I attack looking after myself and my health and fitness and that sort of thing. But I think, in terms of the value, and I don't think there's a lot of other parents that I speak to that are much different, but the value of getting sun on your kids and getting them moving and getting them away from screens and getting them vegetables. They're like the 4 pillars.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, often it's easier said than done with those things and it's a bit of a battle. But, I feel like especially with Brady, I've always been really, really patient with him in trying to get him to understand and adapt to eating good nutrition. Been a bit more of a battle I totally understand that, you know, you're at your wit's end and you've been there for 20 minutes sitting at the dinner table and nothing's happening and like throw them crackers, you know, or throw them, just like give them whatever they want. They've just got to eat, you know.
We're mainly vegetarian and so we eat a lot of really good food and we're very conscious of that. But Sammy won't eat anything but pasta and tomato sauce. Mm. And you know, like, I don't know how this happened. And then I know other kids who live in households that eat a lot more sort of takeaway and a lot more meat than us, and they'll eat raw capsicum and raw and broccoli and stuff. And so I have to hide all
Maybe their body's just taking over. Like, the kid's body's going, I just – want to feel some natural food in my mouth on their own.
But it's funny how it must be a reason for it that they just can't eat.
Mm.
Like we have to hide the vegetables from him. And I thought that, well, this is where the humility of parenting comes in, because you assume that, you know, you see parents feeding their kids chips and chicken and chips at the pub or somewhere, and you're like, oh, God, look at that. Well, they're feeding them cheeseburgers or something. You're like, that's no good for kids. But then we find ourselves, we've got to give him the cheeseburger at somewhere because he just fucking won't eat it. Yeah. Well, that's different. But he just won't eat anything else.
Yeah.
He'd rather starve.
Yeah.
And so you suddenly, your judgment.
Am I going to let him go hungry or am I,
So all that judging other parents for their behaviour is like, well, like you found with that woman grinning and going, you'll
just,
see.
Yeah,
you'll
those see. Words still ring in my head. Just you wait.
It's like when your mother says, well, you wait till you've got kids and teenagers and you'll understand it's going to happen soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've got to just learn to go with that dynamic. I like dynamic. That's but and if you're not very good with change yourself, particularly if you're older, it's very challenging to go with that that no rules thing that's going on.
Mm.
So you think that the added back to the lady with the grin, the empathy that you now have being older. Like if I was going to go to a personal trainer, there definitely wouldn't be anyone who was young, because I'd want to see someone who has seen all his ideas fail.
Mm.
Not all of them, but you know, his ideas on why doesn't that fat guy just fucking do something? Mm. What's going on? Like, eventually you'd understand that it's a thing. It's the same as why someone's got a gambling problem or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's definitely this the empathy now that you know that you can't ride someone when the kids are breaking their balls and they haven't had any sleep.
And
finding creative ways, presumably, to help people do that.
One of the big things I say, like that discussion that we had with you and Missy at the beginning, is, you know, you want to find out people's exercise history and what their eating patterns are like and what their goals are and where they've been in the past with those goals, and essentially what you're trying to establish is just what makes that person tick, you know. So, you know, like there might be the most proven and tried training protocol to get it to a specific result. But if that person doesn't prefer to move in that way or has limitations or whatever, you've got to work around that. You know, like people's preferences, I feel like, always trump whatever the right way is, because, you know, essentially you're looking to get into a habit of repetition. And if if somebody's turning up and hating what they do, then they're not going to repeat it.
It's a one-size-fits-all past way of doing things. Mm. It's like our education has to change to work to the individual a bit. Mm. Because if you can find the thing that someone loves doing, like it might be – or whatever, the thing that motivates them, because you ultimately want people to do stuff because they like doing it. They like they feel good about it rather than it – and it's become this thing that everyone – you know, because everyone wants to diet or do whatever and get fit and it's often unsustainable, you know. You do it for a couple of months and then it burns out. You want to find something that can make you happy longer term, you know. It's hard when you're a dad, though, getting – or any parent, you know.
The sustainability thing is an interesting one, I think. One of our trainers used the analogy of a tightrope walker where, you know, when you're – walking across a tightrope, you're holding the big stick that goes across your body, kind of thing. When you get from your first point to the other side, that stick never stays at the same level. You know, it'll go up one way and it'll go down the other way. And I think everyone's, you know, so many people are searching for that sustainable approach to health and fitness, but our lives are so fluid that it's just really difficult to expect that of yourself. Yeah. And
that's the most frustrating thing about little kids, I reckon, is just generally being able to get some kind of routine of things that you do, like being able to meet with people at a certain time, do the things that you need to do to stay sane, and because it's always changing, that's so hard.
Yeah.
I reckon they're probably connected in many ways, that the whole, like, the nature of, say, Fiona and I was not would be was no routine ever.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of doing this and doing that and coming in, going, and no routine in our lives. Then we had the kids.
Mm.
And, of course, then suddenly you got this hectic pressure of everyone saying, you know, they need routine. They need routine. And you say you're trying your best.
Mm.
But therein lies a huge challenge to try and put routine in when you've never had it.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that's linked to all other health stuff, and it goes on and on.
And the children are the agents of chaos, you know. Like I've learned a lot about, with the help of psychiatry recently, about my brain, you know, and about my particular brain and my inability to deal with chaos. And I melt down. Like I made a passing joke here at the early in the thing about – in an early podcast about four-year-olds, I read a book that said four-year-olds can't regulate their emotions. And I said, well, and what I learned from that is neither can I.
Yeah.
And that's a problem, you know, when you're taking things
personally. It's like four-year-old versus four-year-old.
Yeah, yeah. But then I went on this journey of with the help of psychoanalysts and psychiatry to discover my, you know, kind of ADD brain, basically, that can't and never has been able to cope. And that's with all my drinking and self-medicating in the past was to do with overstimulation, not being able to cope with this much chaos. So you drink to narrow your focus. You're trying to block things out. And I'm one of those people, it all makes sense because I go, when I'm in a room, when I'm with the kids and the TV's on or something, or there's some noise and they're trying to talk, I feel like screaming. Like I really can't cope with two noises at once because my brain tries to focus on everything.
Right.
It's not a lack of focus. It's not being able to choose what you focus on.
That's when I know a panic attack's coming.
Right.
When kids are in the car and I'm begging them just to not say anything, and you realize that all they're doing is telling you about their day or in a normal voice, and then the other one says something and you just go, and you go, It's a sign.
Exactly. I know what's happening. And what I now know is that I would walk out on jobs in the past because I couldn't cope, or I just found like I couldn't cope with a lot of normal things in life, and I had to treat that with booze and drugs. So now and what I now know is it's about an inability to process my emotions in reaction to chaos.
Mm.
I take it really like this is the end of the world and I can't get out of that hole and I have to leave.
Mm.
So now, having gotten sober, I've been retested by having two little kids because I'm now at home quite often when Missy's working, looking after two kids, and the doubled up noise and chaos, and I don't have my what I used to use as medication, which was booze to reduce that noise, and it just sends me into meltdown, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like it's hard for everyone, but then there's people who can't actually cope. Yeah.
Is exercise one of those things?
Well, like exercise
if you're on that treadmill or whatever people do.
Does that
just narrow everything because that you're there, you actually have a purpose?
Mm. But also the chemicals. The brain chemistry gets affected by exercise in a way that helps you.
Yeah, absolutely. They say that you know the release of endorphins and dopamine and all that sort of thing and you know, it's really common for people that have been in a place of addiction or you know, in unhealthy habits that lose that, because essentially that creates a void. Like as you say, you know, you've reduced your removed the self-medication, so now you know, you don't have that ability to block out the noise, but a lot of people go to exercise for that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is also
the chemicals, the dopamine, you know,
and can get addicted to it as well. Yeah. So it can almost become an unhealthy habit if you swing too far the other way.
Yeah, yeah.
But, any risk, Dan? Junkie, they used to say. Is that still
I've had periods where I've been really full on about it, and I could actually see it happen. Like it's hard at the moment because with little kids, once they all go to school, I could see it happening. But I definitely, especially as you get older, you notice the effect of doing some exercise. So say you haven't been for a week and then you do something that really stretches you a bit. I have, for the rest of the day, I have this incredible clarity.
Mm.
And it would be the dopamine and stuff that's producing this clarity that's very noticeable.
Mm.
The disadvantage is the more you exercise, the harder you have to go
to get the dopamine. Your tolerance just increases, right?
Your tolerance increases. Yeah. So I used to like when I'd be away for a week because then I'd come in and I'd get this. But, they all say that about mental health, that exercise
Absolutely, yeah. There's a huge link.
If there's some way you can push yourself physically,
yeah,
then it will help with that. But it's
but I don't naturally want to do it. If that's the case, that mental health advantage of doing some exercise, imagine what it's like for obese people. When you've got not only the positive mental stuff, or if you've got depression or whatever, but also the reward thing. There's that other side of things, like the thing, oh, look, I've done something positive today. You know, the conscious, I suppose, benefits.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And so it must be weird in your position, Nick, to see people going, this is the best. I've never felt this good. And then see them 2 years' time going, oh, maybe you never have a fail. Like that's fine. But it's maybe it's not a pass or fail vibe. You know, where would they be if they hadn't have gone through that process? Like you go, oh, how can you? And I've been there where you go, I'm going to do this all the time. This is fucking grass. This is the answer. How could this ever go wrong? And then 2 years' time, you're 15 kilos heavier going, the fuck happened there?
No, but just because you've got to keep it up, it's like with not drinking. It's like if you quit with alcoholism. Once you stop, it's not you can't just stop doing the work. You've got to keep doing the psychological.
Well, yeah, I know. Right. But the
old habits die hard. But it's hard. As they say.
But the big question is how, you know, at what point? Like if you're talking to someone who's been down this road I just talked about, how do you find that tripping point? Where did it go wrong?
Yeah, I mean it's so individual from person to person. I mean you obviously come across people that have their moment. There's a book by a guy called Tim Ferriss called The 4-Hour Body, and he's done a whole bunch of different.
He's
books.
He's a podcaster, big podcaster.
Yeah, and he talks about this book, like I don't think he's an accredited health professional or anything, but he wrote this book that's like 3 inches thick about his experience, and he just turned his attention to focusing on different areas of health. And he gave this example of a guy that he had worked with who had what he called the Harajuku moment. So he's a really successful businessman. You know, he like made, you know, millions of dollars or whatever and was traveling around the world, and he was in Japan, but he was quite overweight. Like that was his thing. He just couldn't get rid of. He was overweight, and that was like one of his big limitations in life. And he got to this point where they were traveling in Japan, going out to dinner one night, and they were in the Harajuku district. And a whole bunch of them. There was a group of six or something, and they went into past this shop, and they're like, oh, let's go and try on all these clothes, you know, like these crazy Harajuku clothes or whatever.
In Japan. No Westerners can fit into Japanese clothes.
So, and he was like, oh, nah, that's not me. I'll just wait out the front. I'm not going to do that. And then they all went in, and he was by himself, and it was like a switch flicked in his head, and he was like, that's not me. I don't limit myself like that. I'm, you know, one of the most successful people in my industry. And then from that moment, it was just a trajectory to success with his health. Like he just couldn't get that. That was like the catalyst for change for the rest of his life.
And some people have those moments like with addiction too, where they're just, there's just a catalyzing moment but they're hard to fake.
I would love to be, when I resolve my weight issues, I'd love it to be from my own choice. I'm doing it, you know, without going on about it too much, but I'm doing a podcast project called The Good Paddock, which is where I talk about other big fellas, about their journeys and all that, and we try and knock about, like what we're doing with Fatherhood here. And I just like have this desire to, just before the big health scare. I don't want it to be a health scare thing. I want to be
on your own terms.
Maybe I'm having a Harajuku moment where I'm going, I just, it would be nice to be able to go, I decided to do that. It wasn't just because I have fucking mild heart attack or whatever it was.
It's interesting your language there that you use when you resolve your health issues, not if.
Well, I know. You it's know either, that? Well, I'll either just suddenly drop dead or I'll get a health scare. So it is when, but it's happening now. Like it's game on.
But you're doing it. It's not like you're saying if, like it might not happen anymore. You know, like that's, you're concerned about longevity and your kids. And yeah. So this is the upside of being old, I suppose, is you see, then you got to tell yourself the right story, don't you?
Mm.
You got to say, I'm going to be – like you got to grab the thing and this is going to be the story. It's like the podcast, the thing. Mm. You're trying – it seems to me you're trying to build a narrative for yourself that you sort of – that you can get into.
Push myself in a corner that I can't get out of without.
But it's not just that. It's also making a story that you can think of. And I've done that all my life. I've needed a strong narrative to – whether it was getting sober or I've needed to have this story for myself. This is where I'm going. And – but I suppose you've got to find that with people, what resonates.
What tools are available.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, like you obviously raise, you'll be able to teach your kids nutrition and health with this wealth of experience doing your job. It's not just, not the knowledge and the technical nutrition stuff and the exercise stuff, but it's all the experience. So when your kids show, you know, signs that they don't think like you, then you have a better chance of understanding because you've seen and dealt with thousands of people that think in so many different ways, and that's you know that's kind of what I reckon one of the big advantages of using what you know within your job,
right?
And you know, and I'm
building it into your changes,
and I'm literally just using what we've developed here in the studio with Hang On To Your Hat, and gone, hang on. That could be a narrative that could work well.
Yeah.
You know, it clearly we're way better dads than when we started.
Because you've got an clearly existing
more experience and more
because you know you've got an existing interest in it.
Exactly.
You keep showing up to podcasting. So you're trying to do, it seems, is to chain the health thing to that.
Definitely.
Because that's a train that works, you know. And that's with what you're doing compared to old style gyms, trying to find what's going to keep people, you know, empowered in their life and all that sort of stuff.
Mm.
You know, it's great to go into the gym and hear you and dads talking about their kids too. You know? Like I feel like that's the antithesis to the kind of macho gym experience of the past. Like guys talking about the punamis and shitstorms they've had to deal with before they go to work with the kids and that's good.
Yeah, it's sort of I think we're pretty far removed from the Instagram gym culture that that saturates the industry. You almost, you know, you see what's out there and you sort of wonder, like, where do we even fit in this industry, you know what I mean? But I think that's kind of what the appeal is for a lot of people, because it just separates from that, and it's you know,
I can't believe we used to be allowed to just, now knowing what I know about how these dangerous machines work, if you don't know what you're doing, but that they used to just go to a gym, sign the thing, they say, hey, are you going to have a heart attack? And you go, no. They go,
go forth and conquer.
And just go. Look, I never knew how to use any of the equipment, but I'd just crack around and it's like, oh, fuck. Like, the chances of you not hurting yourself are so slim, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Fuck. Yeah, I remember first experience, I would have been 15 years old with my first gym membership, working with these like old clanky weights at this gym in Newcastle, and just looking back on it thinking there was no one around really supervising a 15-year-old with no experience in the gym, just working out.
And doing yourself all these and you know, you scared those kids in high school who'd been doing lots of weights? They got bullied just a little bit too much and they become muscle men. But they've done it themselves, so they're all out of proportion.
Mm-hmm.
They got these skinny little legs and huge
massive
pecs.
Chest,
and like, it's so weird. Yeah. You think, can they correct that?
Mm.
They look like sort of steroid chicken or something. Mm. Weird. We all need it.
We do. We do need it.
Just to keep ahead of the kids, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly. Just to keep ahead of the kids.
Well, keep ahead of the kids, but it's also, I've got to educate the kids to be healthy.
Mm.
So I'm using it the opposite way. So I'm using where I've gone wrong as my tool.
Mm.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't go, kids, if you don't fucking do that, you'll end up like me.
Mm.
But I know the fears. I know that feeling that you're not going to be very good. There's no way I would have joined a basketball team or any kind of sports team because I already thought I didn't know enough and I didn't have the skills.
Mm.
I didn't think about whether I'd get the skills, but it was already too late. So So I'm aware of that. So, you know, I've just signed both kids up. My daughter, who's 9 and showing signs of being my body type, I suppose. Mm. Not my body type now, but my body type up to I was 30, like a whatever. Leave her alone. But do you know what I mean? Like, she's my style, and she's signed up for a basketball team, which is amazing. I would never have had the courage to do that.
Mm.
And we've just signed the boy up as well because he's off season of footy or whatever.
Mm.
And it's just kind of using, you know, I don't want to go that flip-flop generational thing where you push them so hard, then when they have kids, they go, I'm not going to force my kids to do that because like my dad made me do it. He was a prick.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's true. It's interesting.
But it's a very interesting dynamic.
Yeah, with the, I don't know if you guys experience this, but the spectrum between your kids and how, you know, one can be totally one personality and the other be on the other end of the spectrum. And it's funny, I've spoken a lot with Betsy about how even with our 18-month-old, I find that I gravitate towards the time I spend with him sort of organically and a bit more subconsciously because he's so much different to Brady. Like if he hears the door open, he'll be bang outside. He just loves being outside and he loves kicking a ball around. He's 18 months old, you know? So I can be in the backyard with him for 90 minutes and not even notice it because we'll just be, you know, kicking a ball around and just doing those things that I loved doing as a kid.
Mm.
Whereas I've got to work harder on myself for being present with Brady because he's just got this creative, imaginative mind where he just wants to play roles of superheroes and all that sort of stuff. It's like he's on a trajectory to being a comic book nerd, which was, you know, like just different to, it's just different to what I was as a kid and how I'd naturally gravitate. So, that's been a big learning, I think, for, you know, how I approach parenting with him now that he's getting a little bit older as well. And it's not that I don't appreciate the time that I spend with him and that I don't love the time that I spend with him, but you've just got to work that little bit harder to go beyond yourself for it.
Yeah, it really shows you who you are.
Mm.
They might not, your kids might not be like you.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Absolutely.
It's interesting how it is easier to go with the one that's like you because it's like, well, you know what. You know what's going on.
Yeah, you just sort of do it.
Sort of thing.
It's autonomous. Yeah.
The other one is where the work is to keep it even keel. Mm. Yeah, that's great.
I think you know, it's the kind of thing where you like before you have kids, you're like, you know, I just want to have a boy and I want to kick the footy with him and play cricket with him and all that sort of thing, and you sort of visualize that, and then you sort of get to this point where they're four, and it's like it's just not happening the way that you planned and.
Have another one.
Yeah, exactly.
That's we've got him. It's a funny thing the way that works, that you do have these expectations of your kid even if you don't think you do.
You
pay this lip service to I love them no matter what, and you do, and there's a love that people – that you as a – you know, that infuriates people without kids about how it's different in a way you can't explain. But yeah, you do have these expectations. Steve Bidoff was talking about that thing about you've got to love the kid you've got, not the kid you want or wish you had, and that they're never going to be what your ideal kid and their ideal father are never going to match
up.
And that's okay.
Mm.
Yeah, and in the end, they're going to give. What are they going to give you?
Yeah.
You know, like I'm getting so much from my not me. More like you, son, who's 11 years old, and he's flat knacker, like just naturally really good at soccer, just from kicking around with the kids at aftercare.
Mm.
Really good at footy. It's just amazing, and I'm getting heaps from him.
Yeah,
you know, just like learning how the other half are.
You see these parents who, you know, they might be country, they might be farmers, and they've got a kid that's a famous ballet dancer or something, and they're exposed to this culture and community that they just could never have anticipated, or they're a rock star or they're whatever, and suddenly like that they might not have been a musical family at all, and like, wow, where did that come from?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's wild.
Yeah, they're great fun. Mm. Hey, before we knock off, we'll go our spooky session. So
spooky session.
Team Elwood is your company.
Yep.
You run it with your wife. Which is another interesting topic, like self-employment and parenting.
Mm.
But when you're both in the same business, but we'll get to that another day.
Yeah.
So let's say, how does it work? Like, let's say I go, oh, I like that guy. I'm going
so
check it out.
We're based in Ormond Road on Elwood, and the majority of our members do two half-an-hour one-on-one PT sessions a week, and we've got a couple of other features like we've got a group training timetable that you can include that kind of supplements your one-on-one training. All of our members can come in and use the gym as much as they like outside of sessions as well, and we give nutrition guidance and accountability without, you know, telling you what to do with nutrition sort of thing. So, yeah, but I guess that being the what we do, the why we do it is to try to get people towards the outcomes that they're looking for.
Yep.
And, you know, when I say outcomes, that could be anything from losing 20 kilos to having more mobility in your hips or your shoulders, or, trying to just increase energy or improve mood and self-esteem and
get off
depression medication or whatever it is, you know. So, and I think as the thing that you were most scared of when you came in and heard the word team, that's one big part that we try to really rally and create community so that there's good connection going on between trainer to trainer, which is often lost in gyms as well. There's not a lot of team environment amongst the trainers and from trainer to client and from client to client or member to member. So
at some point we need to get community back. We know that. We know with all the mental health issues going on, we know that it's about community and that social media and stuff is making us more separate. I've got this old, I'm like an old cynical artistic loner. You know, I always joke about like that thing about team is the most frightening word in the English language. And that's a well-worn path that I do, which is because I was isolated, I just make it a thing and I joke about it. But the reality is, I don't want to pass on to my kids a kind of isolationist attitude, and community and connectedness is the primary solution to mental health illness. Like, it really, we know this and we've just got to start talking to each other and meeting each other. So that's, fuck, anything that does that's a good
especially
idea.
In our industry as well, there's, you hear a lot of people saying that the path of the fitness industry is going online, like people getting online programs because we're time poor and, just outsourcing your exercise and nutrition through apps and, you don't need a personal trainer anymore because you can just do all this stuff online. But I think
is not the point, is it?
No, absolutely
not. You can use it. Like, I'm combining my journey with podcasting because that's what I dig.
It's called alchemy, man.
Double up. Having a community connection. If you work alone, writing books or whatever, and that's the time when you're connecting with people, that's two in one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because if you're doing your exercise to a virtual instructor on the thing and you never see anyone, you never do anything, tell me you're not in your isolated, depressed state going to just eat shit on the weekend and get shit-faced and drink. Like, it's not to say that's all of it, the gym's going to provide all that, but we've got to do it on lots of levels.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just starting to value all that, bumping into the old lady next door and talking about her roses or something, all that sort of peripheral, like unimportant seeming conversation is just vital to the speed, our brains.
And what I've learned all about personal training, which is, 40 minutes 20 years ago and and today, it feels like it's kind of a little bit like online. Look at online dating when that started. It was like, I was like, oh, that is brilliant. That's the future. This is how it's got to go. Not because it was online, because it took away the need to go out and get horribly drunk at discos just to try and meet someone. But as the stigma wore away, now it's normal. And I've got a feeling this the generation get old and die and fuck off. Right, I've got a feeling that sense of, in the older generations, that sense of having a personal trainer was possibly a feeling that you just can't, you're not clever enough to just go to a gym or to run around the block or to fucking be in a rowing team or something like that. Whereas it's like, let's just accept that the whole world has evolved in a way that these are the answers,
And they'll turn into life coaches too, because it's going to be all part of it. I reckon you'll see more and more personal trainers who've got psychology degrees, and they're going to be training people because of the mental health aspect. Like, how do we stay connected and not isolated. Well, you would naturally,
as you go in your career, surely as a personal trainer, you would end up being a bit of a damn good psychologist. I mean,
yeah, the thing about the time that you spend with your clients, often you'll spend more time with your clients than you will, or your clients will spend more time with a trainer than they will with some of their closest friends and their family and parents and brothers and sisters and that sort of thing. So, yeah there's definitely a relationship that gets established there, and you're reaching people when they're often at their most vulnerable as well, like when they're all, their muscles are full of lactic acid and they're, breathing heavily and out of breath and whatnot, and that can sort of, promote a bit of vulnerability in people, which often unlocks, some really interesting conversations that wouldn't normally be had about, trying to improve in other areas of life as well.
So. See what people are – that's the measure of a gym. See what they're – people are talking about in there, whether they're just talking about how much weight they've benched or whether they're talking about life stuff, like their kids, like talking about how they're, all that sort of stuff. It's nice that all sorts of industries are starting to look at things a bit like that.
Yeah.
Got to do it, man.
Mm. Hey, Nick, this has been fantastic. Thanks a billion for coming on. In. Number
appreciate
28, you'll be known as.
Yeah, I know. But, got a tattoo on the
it's been
back
great.
Of my
I've learned a lot, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And dads, protect your backs. Especially
yes,
if you're
absolutely.
Old. Protect your, don't blow your kidney out your ass by trying to lift a kid into a car.
Put your ego in your back pocket and just.
Yeah.
Brilliant. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, mate.
That awesome podcast was recorded at Castaway Studios in Collingwood. Here, we provide affordable, accessible, professional podcasting production facilities to the full range of podcasters, all the way from basic studio hire right through to full season production packages. You can get us on castawaycollingwood@gmail.com or just look up Castaway Studios on all the social medias.